tourist, Rincewind had decided, meant idiot. As they rode leisurely through the time-scented, bee-humming air, Rincewind pondered on the experiences of the last few days. While the little foreigner was obviously insane, he was also generous and considerably less lethal than half the people the wizard had mixed with in the city. Rincewind rather liked him. Disliking him would be like kicking a puppy. Currently, Twoflower was showing a great interest in the theory and practice of magic.
"It all seems, well, rather useless to me," he said. "I always thought that, you know, a wizard just said the magic words and that was that, not all this tedious memorizing."
Rincewind agreed moodily. He tried to explain that magic had indeed once been wild and lawless, but had been tamed back in the mists of time by the Olden Ones, who had bound it to obey, among other things, the law of conservation of reality. This demanded that the effort needed to achieve a goal should be the same regardless of the means used. In practical terms, this meant that, say, creating the illusion of a glass of wine was relatively easy, since it involved merely the subtle shifting of light patterns. On the other hand, lifting a genuine wine glass a few feet in the air by sheer mental energy required several hours of systematic preparation if the wizard wished to prevent the simple principle of leverage flicking his brain out through his ears. He went on to add that some of the ancient magic could still be found in its raw state, recognizable, to the initiated, by the eightfold shape it made in the crystalline structure of space-time. There was the metal Octyron, for example, and the gas Octogen. Both radiated dangerous amounts of raw enchantment.
"It's all very depressing," he finished.
"Depressing?"
Rincewind turned in his saddle and glanced at Twoflower's luggage, which was currently ambling along on its little legs, occasionally snapping its lid at butterflies. He sighed.
"Rincewind thinks he ought to be able to harness the lightning," said the picture imp,
who was observing the passing scene from the tiny doorway of the box slung around Twoflower's neck. He had spent the morning painting picturesque views and quaint scenes for his master, and had been allowed to knock off for a smoke.
"When I said harness, I didn't mean harness," snapped Rincewind. "I meant, well, I just meant that, I don't know. I just can't think of the right words. I just think the world ought to be more sort of organized."
"That's just fantasy," said Twoflower.
"I know. That's the trouble."
Rincewind sighed again. It was all very well going on about pure logic and how the universe was ruled by logic and the harmony of numbers, but the plain fact of the matter was that the disk was manifestly traversing space on the back of a giant turtle, and the gods had a habit of going round to atheists' houses and smashing their windows. There was a faint sound, hardly louder than the noise of the bees in the rosemary by the road. It had a curiously bony quality, as of rolling skulls or a whirling dice box. Rincewind peered round. There was no one nearby. For some reason that worried him. Then came a slight breeze that grew and went in the space of a few heartbeats. It left the world unchanged, save in a few interesting particulars. There was now, for example, a 5-meter-tall mountain troll standing in the road. It was exceptionally angry. This was partly because trolls generally are, in any case, but it was exacerbated by the fact that the sudden and instantaneous teleportation from its lair in the Ramarok Mountains, 3,000 miles away and 1,000 yards closer to the rim, had raised its internal temperature to a dangerous level, in accordance with the laws of conservation of energy. So it bared its fangs and charged.
"What a strange creature," Twoflower remarked. "Is it dangerous?"
"Only to people," shouted Rincewind.
He drew his sword, and with a smooth overarm throw, completely failed to hit the troll. The blade plunged on into the heather at the side of the track. There was the faintest of sounds, like the rattle of old teeth. The sword struck a boulder concealed in the heather. Concealed, a watcher might have considered, so artfully that a moment before it had not appeared to be there at all. It sprang up like a leaping salmon, and in mid-ricochet plunged deeply into the back of the troll's grey neck. The creature grunted, and with one swipe of a claw, gouged a wound in the flank of Twoflower's horse, which screamed and bolted into the trees at the roadside. The troll spun round and made a grab for Rincewind. Then its sluggish nervous system brought it the message that it was dead. It looked surprised for a moment, and then toppled over and shattered into gravel. Trolls being silicaceous life forms, their bodies reverted instantly to stone at the moment of death.
"Ah," thought Rincewind.